When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Good morning, afternoon, and evening, everyone. Welcome to the Game Week 9 pod of the FPL Wire, powered by Dreams.co. I'm your host, Zofa. Leitreiser couldn't be here today due to some health issues in his family, but I'm joined by my friend, Bakar. How are you doing, buddy? I've got your windows mixed up here. I'm sorry about that. I'll fix that soon.
No worries. Thanks for having me on, Zof. Everything's been going well. 61 points for me this week. My wildcard in Game Week 7 has thoroughly paid off, and I'm very, very excited because my season's back on track. I've risen like 300K in the past two game weeks, and I'm almost on the verge of breaking into the top 100K. So things are going well. Things are looking rosy. What about you?
Decent wildcard. The sun news at the end was annoying. It just put me in a tizzy. Did a lot of planning over 10, 12 days and to get hit with that news last minute. And I'm very bad at reacting to last minute information. So did the best we could. It was annoying to see sun play, but we move on. So I'm also excited to be joined by a guest today, Martin Baker from the Just Above Coverage podcast. I was so happy to hear when his first name was Martin and not Baker. So that solves a lot of issues for me. How are you doing, Martin?
Pleasure to be here. I was just saying congrats to you guys first on your award. I am glad to be guesting after the award, just in case I'd have jinxed that or done something bad. So probably well-deserved. But yeah, no, really happy to be here.
Our pleasure to have you on. How's your week going? You were on wildcard as well.
On wildcard as well. 64 points. Inside the top 10K currently. So it's a good start, you know. Got a few lucky Livermento points off the bench for Armstrong, but you know all about that, Zof.
It was a nervy last few minutes, right? So when out of the three players who got benched, who do you think would have been the most likely to come on for a cameo? I would have picked Armstrong.
All day long. I didn't think there was a moment. He always does early subs as well, like, or 60, 70 minutes. So when it didn't go 60, 70 minutes sub, I thought, maybe, mate, but I was checking.
There was a late sub. There was 5 minutes added on, and there was a late sub, and I expected that. Oh, well, fine. This is going to be that one of those 1 minute cameo things, and then it didn't happen. And then you saw Tella coming on at the end of it. Yes, Ralph's the man.
That this was a case with a lot of people this week. You know, Diaz, Reece James. A lot of people had Livramento's points blocked off the bench. Late riser was one of them, unfortunately.
Yeah. So his wildcard also, he got 60 points in his wildcard and he's pretty happy with it overall. But his primary regret was going James over Chilwell. So we had a lot of discussion about that prior to the deadline. And we'll talk about that more once we get to the Chelsea section. I still think James is a good pick going forward. Right, let's do our sponsor plugs. And today, guys, we have a surprise for you. Bakar is going to read out the DSG sponsor plug. Why don't you take it away, Bakar? Bakar, can you hear us? I think we have lost him there for a second. Baker, can you see if he can hear you?
Can you hear me, Bakar?
Yeah, I can. I can. Now it's back live.
Great. DSG message. Floor is yours.
Okay. A quick word about our sponsors. I'll try my best emirates off. Dreamset Go is a global portal for fans to gain access to sporting events around the world. Accommodation, flight tickets, hospitality, stadium visits, everything can be tailored exactly to your requirements. They also do celebrity experiences, which include masterclasses with your favorite sports celebrity or something as simple as birthday shoutouts. You can find links to the products in the description below. They're also tying up with some top-notch premier clubs, which we will announce shortly.
Nicely done. I think this should be a regular thing now.
So I tried my best.
The FPL Wire is also part of the Fantasy Football Scout Network. All stats you used in this pod are from the Scout members area. If you haven't signed up, please sign up already using the link below. And we're also happy to announce that thanks to your support and your votes, the FPL Wire picked up gold in the Best in Fantasy Football Podcast category at the Football Content Awards this year. Thank you so much for your support, for your votes. It only pushes us to get better, and we will do endeavor to move in the right direction from here on as well. Bakar, anything to add?
I was speaking to Pranil before the pod as well, and he was extremely thankful to everyone for their support to win. The best podcast in this category is amazing, you know, considering that it's our first year in terms of producing content. So I'm extremely grateful. All three of us are extremely grateful for your support, and we really, really value it a lot. On a lighter note, Zoff, I was frankly surprised that we won in the
Fantasy football
category. I was thinking we'd probably be best in the fantasy category. What do you think? You know, this podcast is more about fantasies and guilty pleasures.
I think if you were here on more often, maybe you didn't go on your study breaks, that's what you would have been nominated for.
Yes. Thankfully, I went away so that I gave you guys a chance.
Absolutely. Otherwise, you know, all sorts of content awards you'd have been awarded for. Who knows? Not just football. Right.
Moving on.
Let's jump in now to game week 8. Let's talk about it, starting with Watford-Liverpool. One of the most one-sided games of football I've ever seen. Martin, your take.
They're just relentless. It's, you know, it. Every single game, you know, they get over 20 shots. And there's no difference whether they're home or away. I think they average like 21 shots away and 20 shots at home. It's just relentless attacking. Yeah, I mean, it feels like a waste if you've only got one of the attackers, doesn't it? But it's just trying to get that second one. They're just so good. So good. And what more can you say about Mo? You know, he's just another planet.
You know, which goal do you think was better, this one or the last one?
I like the last one. The last one.
Me too.
Yeah, for me. Too. The game, the moment, just magical. But, you know, this one just makes him look stupid more than anything. Just played with him.
Absolutely ridiculous. But let's talk about Watford. I thought Watford, in terms of shape, they really didn't know what they were doing. There's no cohesion, nothing in terms of passing. So how much of it do you think was Liverpool being very, very good and Watford being poor, Bakar?
I don't know. I haven't been impressed by Watford at all this season. Apart from the one game against Norwich in which they look good. Like, they accumulated like 6 of their 8 big chances in that one game alone. And the rest of the 7 games have had just the 2 big chances, which just tells you all, really. I mean, they haven't really clicked as a unit. I think it will take time for Ranieri to settle in, if at all he's allowed to settle. He might be gone before he's given the opportunity to do so. But frankly speaking, I just stay clear of all their assets, including Saar. Like, I think if you want him, it's time to sell.
I think the only thing on Saar was that when you looked at that lineup, it looked like it was going to be a 4-4-2 almost, as they set up. And they played a bit of 4-4-2 last season. And when they did 4-4-2 and Saar was on the right at that time, he was bad. So he had a bad spell for them and didn't have the greatest spell. And then they switched to this 4-3-3, what we saw them come into the season with, moved him into a three. And he's been, you know, a really good player. So when it looked like a 4-4-2 again and you had Cucho and Dennis, I thought, well, they're going to go up front. He's going to go on the right. But he didn't really. So he did stay up top and they went wide. So he's almost more out of position in the formation they played. It's very hard to stay with him if you've got him. But if there are other fires, you are getting a number nine. So then that might be an even better asset. So it's difficult, though, because just know that price drops are coming and, yeah, you're going to get off.
Get off, you think? Or just give him another couple? Because Everton just lost to Doucouré. We got that news today.
Yeah.
The next fixture, I think, could be a bit better. Maybe wait for another week and see how he plays. Because I don't really think we can read much into that Liverpool game in terms of how Watford will set up. He might not even be up top the next game.
Yeah, and he knocked on the door a few times. It wasn't like he wasn't completely involved in it. He can score a brace in any game. He did it before against Liverpool, you know, and he is playing number nine. Like, you definitely wouldn't buy him, but...
Stick around.
I mean, the only reason to perhaps keep him is if you have other sort of more pressing transfers in your team. Or, I mean, and there's another thing as well that, you know, in that price range, there are not exactly too many options that are standing out. So you can afford to sort of rotate him in the spell of fixtures, then I guess it's okay to even keep him because the other options don't exactly stand out.
What about Jota? Jota on a stick, ship?
I think it's time to sell personally.
Right?
Firmino's back in form and this headache is just going to be sort of there for the foreseeable future from now on, and guessing before every game whether or not he's going to start. I just think it's too much of a headache.
Martin? I think we're having some tech issues. I don't think Martin is able to hear me. Bakar, could you?
I'm back. Yeah.
You're back.
There he can hear.
Just dropped out.
Cool. So we're just asking, what's your thoughts on Jota? It's a sell, right?
It's a sell, I think. Yeah, the thing with Jota is, like, I hear lots of people always say rotation risk, and he's not a rotation risk because he always plays. Always plays some minutes normally is and gets them in. Kind of more interesting, the other one of, does any of us get lured in on Bobby? Because like the movement was different. I can see you shaking your head, but the movement was different. Like, normally we just all talk about how much he gives to the team and what he does and the work that he puts in. And we think that he's going to be in against the harder teams because he'll do the work. And you were like, actually, what we saw is some really good number nine running. And I'm like, that interests me big. And it's not the first time this season. You know, the Champions League, he came off the bench and scored two playing high. Maybe. He's a lot of money still.
Again, I don't think, will he be getting asked forward in all the games? Because I'm really very wary to read anything into that game just because of how poor Watford were.
Yeah, agreed.
Like,
one to keep an eye on.
Definitely one to keep an eye on, especially with the dearth of forwards right now. In that mid-price bracket, something we can look at. And anything else to add from this fixture? Should we move on to Villa Wolves?
I think we should move on.
Yeah, we'll come back to Liverpool more when we talk about the captaincy.
Yeah.
So talk about Villa Wolves. John McGinn was pretty impressive in this new role that he's found.
Good.
He was good, but how did Villa lose this game?
I think Douglas Luiz runs out of pace. You know, he's come in and played, and then marvellous is not marvellous, you know. that's an issue.
I think in terms of fantasy interest from Wolves, I think we're talking Jimenez and Huang. Jimenez, the benching was surprising. I think, Bakar, remember we were talking about it prior to kickoff that he played, I think, on Thursday. Yeah. But I think I like seeing
him. He came off the bench. He played just the 30 minutes on Thursday as well. So I was sort of wary that this might happen. But once I saw that he's only played 30 minutes, I thought he'd be good to go, which was very, very surprising. But this is something worth keeping in mind now after the next international break, actually. Because if he's coming back late, then this possible benching could happen again.
Yeah, but it was nice to see in general. It seems like a trend across most of the players, I think, except Aston Villa. Most of the players were rested, I think, especially the guys on Saturday. So it's probably a good thing in terms of player welfare, I think. But yeah, what about Wang? I don't think Wang had, one shot in the box. How did he do?
One shot in the box, XG of 0.04. In my opinion, I won't read too much into this game because Wang gets the service from Jimenez. And if Jimenez isn't around, he automatically becomes a worse option. So I won't read too much into it. If you have Huang, I think you should keep him. I want to actually talk about Matty Cash in this fixture here. As the right wing back now, we've consistently seen from game week 4 onwards, he's getting lots of touches in the final third. He's playing really advanced, even according to the average position map. And even this game week, he had the highest number of shots inside the box among all players. So, I'm not advocating to buy him straight away, but I mean, once the fixtures there and if Villa stick to this the system, I can see them keeping a few clean sheets and Cash doing well in terms of attacking returns.
He's a better one
over
target.
Do keep it.
Yeah, sorry, Baker.
I'm not sure they keep this formation. Like Ponzobi was bad. Was bad, bad playing in the middle. And you think Konsum and Mings are a really good partnership. I think that Courtney House will come in for Ponzobi and play that middle role. But then if he doesn't do too well and Leon Bailey comes back and you've got good wingers, you know, that's the thing. Bertrand Traore, the likes of them, you know, they might push Watkins wide. Seems like Ings is starting maybe to get the main man again. I thought Watkins was lively, but then you just think Ings gets the goal. I'm not 100% sure that they keep this system, but I definitely think Cash is one to keep an eye on. It come off though. I'm not sure what happened there. It came off
dead
10
leg.
Minutes ago. Dead leg was it?
Right. And there's also Leon Bailey, who's just still to come in. So you don't know with him, they might change up shape a little bit as well.
Yeah. Where else can he other than you put him as one of the two strikers or chase the game? So potentially, if he goes back to right back, we saw last season, a great option.
Right. I miss having LR already now that we're going to talk about Leicester. Man, I'm sure we'll come back soon. So there's no LR today. Leicester, Man United. You know what the one thing I'm happiest about my wildcard is not having any United players anymore. I can finally enjoy a United loss properly without feeling like, oh, what's the point I have? Why do I have other players? So
Luke Shaw in particular, I mean, zero-pointer.
But that's a normal thing. I think like Luke Shaw, two-pointer is like a six-pointer nowadays, isn't it? United are going.
It's just sort of sad to see how poor United have been of late defensively. They're just conceding so many big chances. Their defensive numbers have fallen off a cliff in recent times. And I mean, Leicester haven't even been that great this season, but to see them press so well and force so many mistakes out of United just speaks volumes, doesn't it?
Right. Martin, are you back with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Perfect. What's your take on this?
Man United.
Both Man United and Leicester in this match.
Well, I think we've all just thought, what on earth have they been doing for the last 2 months? Because play two up top, it's just a much better way for them to be, you know, like just play it. You know, you've got really good wing backs, you've got really bad wingers like Perez. Play the two strikers, like, and he's just done what he needed to do because he probably would lose his job if he didn't. So hopefully they learn and they'll do that for more. But Tielemans just is such a baller when they then, you know, have a free in midfield. That he's not doing, you know, overworked in terms of having to get up and down, is he just controls the tempo of the game. And then you go the other way around and Matic and Pogba is just bad. Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to bring up that pivot table which you had sent me earlier?
Yeah, you can do if you want me to rant some more. I'll cover Pranil with a Man United rant this week if you want.
That would be great.
So this is the caption you had sent me as a good double pivot. This is with Tielemans and Soumaré.
Yeah, well, they're just one of them stays in the middle of the pitch. That's a bonus, you know, if you can sort of hold a position and stay there and do some stuff. So Tielemans will, you know, control that middle area and then make the run when he needs to. Realistically, like you've got Soumaré, and he will. The main heat spots are at the back. He will cover that defensive area, and he's covering the wing backs. So the wing backs are going to go forward, and he'll slot into that position. That works. And then you've got, you know, it's just all never going to get too far forward. You then swap that and look at, you know, what Pogba and Matic did. They just do whatever they like. The biggest prime example for me was they get back in the game, a brilliant Rashford goal. Like, that run was so good. And then you see them attack and you're like, is this a break from a corner or something? Because suddenly it's like three on three. And it's like, no, they just took a kick off. And they just walks past them. And I know that the central defenders for United aren't particularly good, but the reason Vardy's able to peel off is because he's got 40 yards of space to peel off at. And therefore he's got no pressure. He's got no one on his heels when the shot comes in, because they're just not occupying any kind of position. Like, it's so sporadic there. There's no real clusters. And I mean, Matic's one is just weird. It's some kind of odd diagonal map. It looks like a crop circle or something. It's so bad. Both of them, Pogba and Matic, seem to want to play on the right hand side. You're like, or on the left wing. So they've both got like heat maps, defensive right, attacking left. It's just bad coaching.
That's what it looks like. Absolutely spot on.
Yeah. So, sorry, Pranil.
Yeah, but I think you hit the spot on with Leicester with regards to the system. You also heard Kasper Schmeichel say post-game they're much more comfortable playing in this back three. So if you still own Harvey Barnes, for whatever reason, I think absolutely time to get rid now. Iheanacho, I think, is back on the radar.
Yeah.
As a differential option at 7 million in that mid-price bracket. Bakker?
Yeah, definitely. I agree. But, you know, the annoying thing with him is going to be that he might get subbed early. I've been noticing that this season with the signed Daka, I think. He's coming on. Yeah. He's coming on usually around the 70, 75 minute mark for Nacho. Having said that, I mean, I do think Nacho is still a decent option that at that price, and he might do well given the fixtures. I want to talk a bit more about Vardy, because a lot of people are, you know, including us, a lot of other people have chosen to ignore him. He's blanked just twice in 8 games. He's on a 4 games scoring streak. So I just like to explain why I still think that it makes sense to keep ignoring him despite his recent run of scores. And obviously, it's obviously hard to argue against someone who's performing so well. But I just think he's at that awkward price range. And the point I'm trying to make it is that when I look at the expected goal involvement numbers per start this season, Antonio and DCL are easily the best. They have a XGI per start of 1.2. Ronaldo has XGI per start of 1. Now, Saint-Maximin, Vardy, Wilson, Jimenez, Tony all have an XGI per start of 0.6. Now, this tells you that the underlying numbers of Vardy aren't that impressive. And he's actually outperformed his XG by 3 goals. And he's highest in terms of overperformance among all players in the league for XGI and XG. I just think the underlying data is suggesting that, you know, strikers like Jimenez, Tony, Antonio, they're sort of matching Vardy's numbers for 3 million less. So despite the fact that he's been clinical, I still think it makes sense to ignore him, because over the next 3 to 4 fixtures, I don't see him captaining Vardy in any of those fixtures. I mean, Brentford away, Arsenal at home, Chelsea. I don't think those fixtures are great. I just think that it's best to wait till game week 13 before we sort of strongly consider Vardy as an option, despite him hauling and putting egg on our face every single week so far.
I don't agree with you at all on the underlying numbers thing. Vardy consistently, even in the Leicester season when they were winning the league, he's just how he does. He's such a clinical finisher. He's always going to outperform his numbers. Son, Hazard, Vardy. So I agree with the point you're making in terms of the price brackets and him not being captainable and all that such. But just the fact that his XG numbers is what you read into. Vardy, there's almost no point. Martin, what do you think?
No, Zoff, I'd like to cut you off here. Over the last three seasons, he's actually been underperforming his XG. He hasn't been overperforming his XG. After that season, which you mentioned, he's been underperforming his XG for the past three seasons successively.
Right, but still, I'm just talking about Vardy, Son. Like, maybe I was wrong in that sense, but I don't think you can establish that as a reason for not going for Vardy because his XG is not. I don't think that should be a consideration at all in your decision making because he outperforms. He's just so good in terms of his finishing. He's always going to see XG measures it for an average player. Certain players always going to be better or under that XG, right?
Fair enough, but the difference is massive. The difference is massive. Even Suchek fell off after like a month. This is what happens with XG. This is exactly the point I'm trying to make. That this is a spell where it's hard to argue against him because he's doing well. But perhaps from a month later, when once his fixtures have passed, you'd probably realize that Jimenez, Tony, and the likes have sort of come close to matching him, and that's.
Once the chat confirms we are back, we can resume the conversation. I restarted the stream. I think we should be back. Let us know, guys, if you can see us.
Yep, I think it's back.
I think it should be back, and I think the video also should be smooth now. I don't think we should have...
It's working, issues. Yeah. People are saying it's working.
Perfect, cool. Let's go. So, yeah, United, we were talking about, do you think Greenwood keeps his spot?
I think so, but they've got lots of options. Like, I definitely wouldn't prioritise him out. Bruno's a lot of money, but... We had a fair amount of chances on the weekend, is that there'll be a point... There'll be a point in the next few weeks where probably Bruno puts his hand up and double figure hauls and suddenly we'll all think about it again. But I just feel like if the manager says the balance is wrong, if you've got players saying the balance is wrong, if everyone's saying the balance is wrong, then there's other places to go.
Let's talk stick to United. Maybe this is sort of overlapping with what we'll talk about the next section, but how do you think they change it up? The next game, what do you think they'll do? Solskjaer actually talked about, he said something is broken, something we need to change. He said that also in his post-match. So what do you think they changed for the Liverpool game?
I think Fred makes a big difference. I think it has to have Fred. He's the only one that actually is able to stay defensively. A lot of people feel of McTominay's defensive. I feel like it's more just because he's really big. Like, he actually gets forward a lot. He makes a lot of runs. If he was 3 inches shorter, we'd all think he was box to box midfielder. But Fred has to come in. Other than that, what can they do?
Back three, maybe. He's like these back three in these bigger matches.
I definitely think there's a chance that they'll try and close games out. So when he first got the manager job, didn't he? He very much tried in the big games. He got lots of nil-nils or 1-0s, and he tried to just try and grind games out, shut them down. I'd actually be very pleased if I was Liverpool, if he tries that. Because I feel like if he actually tries to set that up, I don't think you can stop Liverpool from scoring. I think the best way that they could do is attack with world-class players and see what they can do with it. If he sets up defensively, Liverpool score early, they're in a lot of pain. So what I'd like to see.
Yep. We'll talk more about United soon. Let's move to City, Burnley. What did you make of City's performance, Martin?
Just so efficiently great, aren't they? You know, it's as a Spurs fan, you kind of all summer made your bed that Kane was going to go there, and you. I do find it now hard to watch him and not think, how many would he score every week? Like, there is part of me that feels that way watching them, but they're just, they could have scored five, but worst case, they scored two. That's just they're comprehensive. Don't get me wrong, Burnley did have a couple of chances, you know, but then they were playing, you know, three centre backs, one of them at left back. You know, they can do what they like, really. Got very, very good players. It'll be very interesting to see how that works going forward. Sterling and Foden had very similar heat maps, but looks like is that one played number nine, one played left wing first half, and then vice versa in the second half. And that sort of suggests neither of them really put their hand up to get the position. Don't know. Back on.
Yeah, I watched the whole game, and City never really got out of first gear, to be honest. Burnley they surpassed my expectations. I didn't really expect them to give City a good game, but they had chances to score, especially in the first half. Cornet missed a glorious opportunity. It was well saved, actually, by Stefan, and it really should have been a goal. But Cancelo was impressive on the right. I just think he's a different beast. He had a big chance to score that was well saved by Pope. I hope he starts on the weekend, because the lineups just come out and both Foden and Cancelo are starting. I hope both of them get rested in the Carabao Cup and start the Brighton game next weekend. But you never know with Pep, so that's kind of set the alarm bells ringing. And it's actually nice to have a nice strong bench these days, given the rotation that might kick in. But having said that, I just think that City defense remains an elite option. It's not really essential to own any of their attackers at this point in time. De Bruyne, I feel, is a bit too expensive. Foden is a decent option to own, and I don't really realistically think any of the other midfielders are worth considering. What do you reckon, Zoff?
If it's Man City, I really didn't want to go for Phil Foden, but because of the Sun news, it really was nowhere else to go. So
yeah,
I thought he was good. He could have got on the score sheet, could have gotten more. And generally, they were quite effective, but I thought they obviously didn't hit fifth gear. They weren't all guns blazing. They were quite open defensively, quite fortunate not to concede a few times. KDB was impressive, and the comments Pep made in his press conference yesterday was interesting to note. He said KDB needs minutes. He needs rhythm. He had problems with injuries. So that means KDB is going to be starting more matches, which in turn means City are going to be playing well. In those matches, when KDB plays, I think City are much better as a team overall. So the next 3-4 games, I think they're going to get back again in terms of goal scoring.
Diaz might get you a goal from a KDB corner.
Yeah, that's where it's good, right? For the defenders, exactly. Whenever KDB does play, it's because set piece delivery is so good.
Yeah, where do you stand on Laporte now that Stone started his first fixture this season?
It becomes a dodgy area now, right? It becomes Stones and Laporte become like a no-go.
I just think it's too risky now. Stones played well as well, and Pep was sort of complimentary about his performance after the game. I just think it makes sense to go with either Diaz or Cancelo, honestly. I wouldn't go Laporte just to save like the extra 0.3 or 0.4 million.
Yep.
You wouldn't go there now. I don't think we can go there, but you wouldn't move him out either. I mean, how hard must it be? How hard is it going to be for any of us that have got City defenders in now to ever get them out? Because you just can keep it clean in any game. You're literally, your main worry each week is whether they play. It's not whether they clean.
Yeah,
because regardless of the fixture, I mean, they are the tough fixture themselves. So with City, the fixtures don't really matter. It's just that... Cancelo and Diaz keep on starting. Diaz is obviously more secure in terms of security, but with Cancelo, you hope he gets a run of games as well. He played well, I thought. He played well, and I was actually going through the forums, and they think that he's firmly in their first choice 11. So I think he's a good option. I'd still probably go with him over Diaz.
Yeah. We should have the lineups, in fact, in another 10-15 minutes, right, for the City game. So let's talk about them once we have those lineups coming.
Or are they I did bring this up. Cancelo and Foden are starting. I did bring this up.
Okay, sorry, I missed that. So,
yeah.
What do you make Sterling, of that?
Grealish is starting as well. Grealish and Foden and Cancelo. Those are the three I read. Let me check the whole lineup. I sort of missed the whole lineup.
That's interesting because there's a decent turnaround between matches, right? I don't think necessarily Foden is starting today.
Laporte is starting tonight. Laporte is starting. Bernardo is starting yet again. Grealish, Foden, Mahrez. That's the front three. De Bruyne is starting as well.
I don't think we can read too much into the tonight because the fact is that they've got to win tonight. You know, is even a draw is a bit dodgy. You know, is the Bruges are currently sitting ahead of them. PSG are definitely no mugs. Yeah. Leipzig
this is definitely a must-win game for them. And Zoff, for you, especially as a Foden and Cancelo owner, I think what works in their favor is that this is a Tuesday-Saturday schedule. And City are playing actually on the... they have a late kickoff as well. So you'd expect Pep to go with a strong lineup. And I think both of them should still start, hopefully.
And remember that he loves Potter. So Pep... you know, absolutely loves Potter. He will be very respectful in that game and he knows they'll be up for it. So I do expect him to put a very strong lineup.
Yep. Definitely recognizes that Brighton, where they are in the table, they're not an easy opposition. Segues nicely into their fixture against Norwich. So what
triple Brighton on wildcard.
The Josh Sargent shot. Oh my God.
Yeah. That was, I'm not sure I can speak about it.
Let's talk a little bit about Norwich.
I have a serious dislike for Josh Sargent after that game.
even Pukki had a glorious chance to score.
In his prime position as well, isn't it? It's the position he loves, that right channel clip. He just assumed it was going to fly into the left-hand side. Loves that high clip. But not to be, I'm not going to pretend I didn't celebrate the Duffy yellow card at the end. I absolutely
there was 3 points. I think he was on for 2 bonus as well, right? I think that was
that,
3 points.
That was actually effectively cost him two bonus and that one for the yellow card as well. So 3 points right there.
Interesting. They keep
Dunk's stretching. So good at bonus though. Dunk, you know, I got Dunk in just because he is such a bonus monster. Not so much the goal threat that he was last season. But just controls bonus so well. Makes it very difficult, I think, for Sanchez. So I know Sanchez outscored, you know, is Ramsdale, the Ryers and everyone else and those bits. But the reason was that you felt that he's just never going to get the bonus because their fullbacks or wingbacks are so high that they could be involved attacking wise. They're so dangerous from set pieces. You know, they've got like 4 players at 7 foot. And Dunk just kicks in with 30-35 on the bonus every time. So it is a 6-pointer or not, normally for them. So, Norwich,
Norwich, yeah. I wanted to talk about Norwich because I honestly haven't really watched, I think, either of their games. Last two where they've kept clean sheets, but they've changed system, right? They've gone to a back three. And in general, have you had a chance to look at their games, look at their numbers?
I've not watched a lot of them, as none of us have, because we just look at them for fodder, you know, and hope that we can capitalize on it. But it's very interesting to see that it is very much, it's like a 5-3-2, and there's a real big gap between that 3 and 2, you know, is that it's 3 DMs effectively in front of a flat back 5. And they broke well. You know, is they get it long, they know what they're doing. Pukki and Sargent were willing runners. They both, like we said, could have scored on the break. It's interesting thinking about the Chelsea one. It's like, what would they do in a real back five, then 3 DMs if Chelsea score early? I don't know. When I look at the players that are on the bench, Brandon Williams, Omar Bamadali, Rupp, Gilmore, I'm like... What are they going to do? They're just going to go, maybe we'll go 5-4 defensive midfielders at the back. Like, they're not going to change. And it's just a question of what Chelsea do with them, I think.
You're jinxing my double Chelsea defense, Baker.
Yes.
It's damage control, right? Yes. I think you offered today Norwich a 2-0 or a 1-0. They'd probably take that. Doesn't affect their goal difference too much.
Yeah.
And Chelsea would probably take that as well, given the comments today. But let's come back to that. Southampton Leeds. Let's talk about this as Adam Armstrong owners. What do you think happened there?
Yeah. I never really liked him, if I'm honest. This is the problem, is that, you know, anyone does go on. This is the problem of why I didn't want to pick him in the first place, is if you go on and check like his season heat map on SofaScore, his highest position for the season is kicking the ball off in terms of touching the ball. So he was always a risk if that's your, you know, main asset is kicking a ball off. But I didn't really think it happened. I do think the way they played does make me think that Armstrong isn't coming back in for Brozier. I think that's a Brozier or Adams call now as a big man. He's playing for the other one. And while Ward-Prowse is out, they're lacking creativity. So you want a bit more on the forward line. So Redmond, who played well, you can see him doing it. You know, maybe if Ward-Prowse comes in, you think move Redmond to one of the wide positions and you could play Armstrong with him. But then you just keep thinking to yourself, why would I then want the £6 million one who kicks the ball off when I can have the 5.01 that scores goals?
Yeah, but what are you guys now planning to do with him? Are you guys keeping him, selling him, benching him?
Well, on wildcard, like, you should have a pretty good team. that's always an aim. And I can... He's currently sitting second on my bench and Livramento's first on my bench. And I'm like, why would I transfer him out and cause myself even more pain? Because where are you going to go with it? Like,
exactly.
We just watched Huang, you know, not have any shots. Not going to go there now. I haven't got the money to get to Tony. And the only thing I might do is do that. If I thought there was significant rotation risk and therefore was going to use the bench, then I might go and just say, take the risk, go down to Brozier, give me the £1 million, start my son fund a bit earlier. Maybe I'd go that way. Would you do back?
Zoff? I don't own Armstrong. Zoff?
I've got 0.4 in the bank and I've got Armstrong as my second sub. So I'm going to wait and see midweek if there are any injuries, if there are any takeaways, any players I want. Seeing like, let's say if Chilwell is benched midweek, or James is like, you know, the things monitor midweek liners, but I'd like to give it one more week to see how the situation develops, because I don't know why that happened, really. There are a lot of theories to that in the Saints forum. Some reckon initially it might have been just because of Leeds, because Brozier is a bit more mobile than Armstrong. He covers a bit more ground. Or secondly, the fact that Adam Armstrong requires Che Adams to work effectively as part of a front two. So it's worth monitoring. And I think if you can hold him, give him one more week to see, because the Watford fixture right after is a really good one as well.
Yeah, Norwich soon as well.
After Villa, this Watford, Villa, Norwich.
Hard to start him though, and it's off. That's the problem. Because
no, definitely won't start him this week, because you're almost consigned to a cameo now, right?
Yeah.
But it's very strange that he didn't come on for any minutes whatsoever. That seems injury or something, like, it's a very strange thing for an attacker.
We didn't hear anything post-match, did we? Not that I've read.
It's not like the other three players he brought on were defensive players. He brought on three attackers, like for like.
Yeah.
So
you'd like to hope we hear something before kickoff, though, you know, this time. Someone's got to ask him, surely, as to what's happened there.
It's interesting because he had made comments on the Friday that Brozier is not ready to start. There were some comments that related to the press, so complete curveball there. And
yeah, trolled you big time.
Not that bad, actually, because without him, I wouldn't have got Livramento 6 points. So
I feel like he scored.
All hail, Ralph. Bakker, talk to us about Leeds, Bakker.
Really poor. Just the two shots inside the box without Rafinha. Minimal threat. I still have the Rafinha shirt in my background, and the Antonio one. I got those two for myself this week. I'm a huge fan of Rafinha. I love the guy, and you can see what a huge difference he's made to Leeds in recent times. And I just think they haven't really hit the form that we've expected of them from last season on. The levels are not the same. Their numbers have sort of fallen away from last season. They aren't sort of creating as many opportunities. I think it's taking them a bit of time to click the season. Their fixtures are still good, so I see no reason not to buy Rafinha or to sell him if you own him. So it's just an easy keep and play Rafinha against Wolves for me this week.
Definitely, Rafinha goes nowhere, but you'd be hoping now that Phillips is back. I think he's a big miss more so than Ayling or Bamford. Phillips really needs to come back into that team, and I think he will next week.
Yeah. On to Brentford, Chelsea.
On to Brentford, Chelsea. Proper smash and grab.
And I was watching this game as an ASB owner, and the last 20 minutes were like constant torture. Watching a long throw after long throw, ball after ball come into the box, and Mendy make save after save. It was just pure torture. And like, I couldn't believe my luck how I got away from that game with an ASB clean sheet. But then again, what the main takeaways from this, there are two takeaways for me from this game. Firstly, Brentford are looking really solid, and with the run of fixtures they have coming up, that double up on Boema and Tony looks a very solid option to have. Boema in particular standing out as the best option in his price range at the moment. Same for Tony as well, to be honest, because you know his passing range is great. He's heavily involved for Brentford. Chelsea, I noticed they haven't sort of looked that great defensively this season. I did a piece on this earlier as well. Their numbers have actually declined significantly from their numbers that we witnessed under Tuchel last season. Do you think there's something to that, Zoff? As a Chelsea fan, what are your thoughts?
I think we are very fortunate to be where we are in the table. And today's press conferences were a bit strange. Tuchel is talking about how the team's not playing well, sort of making excuses almost for Lukaku and the team. Then Reece James is talking about we are going to start playing well. And we're still at the top of the table. So we've gotten there through Mendy's played a large part in getting us here. And I think he will play a large part. But I think the defense will only get better from here. It's been slow to gel. Kante has been in and out of the team. We are trying to adapt the shape, try different systems to accommodate Lukaku. And today he even spoke about possibly going to a four.
So, speaking of defense, Zoff, what are your thoughts on you own James? A lot of people are asking about Chilwell. Who would be your picks in the defense if you had to pick one this week and for onwards?
I think, again, it depends on the structure of your team. Like the structure all three of us have right now, we have a strong first sub with like the likes of a Boomo, we have your Livramentos and Duffy. So in which case, Chilwell is a great option because as we discussed last time, he doesn't get subbed on much. James is almost always getting subbed on because of his versatility. Yeah. He comes on to give Aspie a few minutes off, can come off in defensive midfield, can come off to, if you're playing Hudson-Odoi, tighten things up. So James is riskier, but I think James is a clear first choice, as is Chilwell now, to be frank, after his last two performances. Like you see, he does trust James and he's gone on record to say the Brentford game, he didn't start James because he wasn't ready to play 90 minutes. It wasn't really a selection issue as such. So I don't think if you have James now, there's no need to sell him. I think he's going to start the next game against Norwich. It's a very different game altogether to Brentford. You need creativity.
Yeah, Zoff, I missed you for the past 30 seconds. What were your thoughts on Chilwell? I'm sorry.
I did too. We just say it was great.
Yeah.
Today's been a wreck in terms of tech issues, I guess, right? Just cursed. It's like the Manager of the Month award. So just saying, Chilwell, in short, the advantage of Chilwell is doesn't get subbed on. So it's easy to accommodate alongside a Duffy, Livramento or a Boomo. James, if you have, don't sell because of the easier fixtures coming, he's likely to play. His link up with Lukaku is going to be important.
on Chilwell's off, do you think he's going to start this week even if he starts tomorrow? because that's the million-dollar question. This is a situation I find myself in, given that it's a Friday deadline, it's all the more pertinent. We won't have team news before Norwich.
That's an interesting question because, like you said, he is first choice and Alonso is playing well. And I honestly don't know. I think you just have to stick with him, right? Maybe don't, if he starts tomorrow, he maybe becomes a don't buy area, but obviously you won't go selling Chilwell because of that. You have to take that on the chin. But if he does start...
I mean, I was thinking he might still be worth buying given the fact that we have a good bench.
Right.
Yeah.
Like in your case, we'll talk about with your Rudiger. What do you think, Martin?
Oh, you've got to buy a ticket if you want to be in it, haven't you? You know, is so I wouldn't sell and I wouldn't buy. And I think, you know, me and Bakar will just go, we've got Aspi. So hopefully it works out, you know.
Aspi, do you
and
think
we know what's going to happen now.
Do you think he's going to get more games at right wing back?
I think he will, actually. Some of the positional way that they worked as like a trio, Chalobah, Kante and Aspi, I thought was, and even Werner actually on that side was, I thought was quite, well, it was definitely well worked. And, you know, when Tuchel mentions the words about trust, and these are the team that trust, I felt like, you can see the way they've worked together, you know, and in position, there was quite a lot of interplay between Aspi and Werner, actually. Aspi dipping inside, sort of underlap into the middle, and him going outside, and you're like, that's not just see what happens. That's well practiced. And he has, you know, he's started as many games this season at right back, right wing back, as he did all of last season already. Now, that's not an accident. You know, he clearly likes him there, but I feel like it's because of Chalobah. Like, the way I watched Chalobah play was like, he's not there just to make up the numbers occasionally and come in. He played like he owned it. He was prepared to go to war with Tony any way he could. You know, he was so combative with him. So I was impressive at left centre back, and produced, you know, I mentioned years off that he produced a performance that Rudiger's not performed in terms of the way he operated in that role. So I felt like the two outside centre backs played like traditional fullbacks, like almost a defensive fullback, that they were competing, looking to win, looking to start counters. You know, is if you go on like recoveries, is Sarr made 10 recoveries in that game, and under the FPL CBI index, sort of clearance blocks, interceptions, he made 16. And that's like so much more involved than what you see from Rudiger. I think Rudiger averages something like 4 per game in the CBI. Like, so then he produced an absolute monster number on the bonus. 35, I think he ended up with something like that, where, you know, without any kind of a attacking return, he poses issues, you know, for that back line. He was good.
Because, you know, one point we noticed last season was that Tuchel wasn't sort of confident taking Rudiger out of the lineup because he wasn't really comfortable with anyone else coming in and playing left centre back. Now, with Sarr's performance, do you think that's going to change off?
Maybe in the easier games. But yeah, if he needs to, he definitely can step in. Because when you have 3 games a week and all that stuff, definitely an option. But with all these big guys, like we saw, we said Diaz is completely nailed on, and we saw what happened this weekend, right? With these guys, City and Chelsea, everyone is just relatively more nailed on. There's nobody who's possibly 100% nailed on. So it's all about like all your appetite for risk. But then again, Rudiger, you'd have to say, is one of the lowest ceilings in terms of bonus also, right? Bonus, attacking threat. Yeah. So there's a clear risk-reward ratio, I think, in the Chelsea defense. You guys lost me again? Could you hear me? I think we dropped out again. Possibly. Right. What else should we... Either of you guys, can you hear me still? Oh, this is terrible. Guys, can you hear me?
Can hear you now.
Yeah, I lost you. Got you back now.
Yeah, I toggled a few buttons. I turned everything off and on again just to try it.
When in doubt, mate. When in doubt.
Yeah. Let's just try to skip through. Let's just try to skip through these. We talk about Spurs, but I want to talk about captaincy a bit more. It feels like we've not gotten to that yet. So, yep. Everton, West Ham, Bucker. Go ahead.
Antonio had quite a few chances to score. I thought he should have really gotten something out of the game. I think the main takeaway from this is that a lot of people are asking whether it's time to sell Antonio. I still don't think that's the case. His numbers are still pretty good. He's second for XG behind Salah this season. West Ham are fourth for XG. Their next two fixtures, Spurs and Villa, they're almost averaging 1.5 XG conceded per game. So I still think that it's worth giving Antonio the next two fixtures at least. I'm a Benrahma owner, and I mean, his stats are okay for that price range, and there's no one else standing out. I mean, there's a case to be made for selling him, but I don't see who's an obvious replacement. So I guess if you don't have like any pressing issues, you can sell him, but like there's no harm in keeping him either.
Martin?
It's a relatively big investment though, isn't it, now having both. Yeah. Like when you're like, I'm not sure on either of them. It's but you do know that, you know, one could be linked to the other. Like you say, Antonio, that late chance, I thought that would have been, you know, surefire for him. But yeah, I don't feel like moving off Antonio yet. I just feel like with you got your Calvert-Lewin and Bamfords and all of these worlds where you're thinking, where's this money actually going to go to? Jimenez now, and then gets a bench in, and we've got another round of internationals coming up in a few weeks' time. Just feels a bit soon. Again, he's one I'm looking at and thinking, is this my son money at some point? You know, is this where I'm going to use it for? I'm not so much looking at it thinking it's going to be Vardy money. But we've all got good money tied up in him. And if he does, you know, pick back up, and West Ham pick back up, which they're more than capable of, it's going to cost a lot of money to get him back. So
I think the switch to Tony in a few weeks appeals, but at least to like, you know, I think when the week Tony has Norwich, Antonio has Liverpool. I think let me just go to the ticker really quick and identify.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
I think 11.
Yeah. You're right, Zob. I've looked into this. Yep. Game week 11, exactly. I've looked into this set of transfers myself, so I know what you're saying. With Benrahma, Martin, you were saying that it's a big investment, but for example, in my case, and I see quite a few other teams with the likes of Bumo sort of emerging as a very budget enabler. A lot of teams have a hybrid structure where they can sort of afford to play forward the back, 4-3-3 or 4-4-2. So, I mean, I have Benrahma on the bench. So in my case, it's not exactly a priority sell. And quite a few others are in the same boat as well. So, I mean, unless you're playing him every week, then I can totally see the point. But, I mean, who would you jump to? I was considering Saka before last night, but Arsenal's performance and Saka's injuries really put me off. So I really don't know where to run.
Yeah, I think in your position you wouldn't, but if people then didn't go with Rafinha because they were trying to just maximize it in the wild card, you'd net, but they for some reason kept Benrahma.
Rafinha's obvious. Yeah, Rafinha and Bumo are obvious.
You know, and Bumo's obvious. So I definitely couldn't rule those ones out, but if you said to me this week, play Benrahma or play Livramento, I think that's a decision now.
Yep.
Where are you leaning there, Bakar? Benrahma or Livramento?
I have both on my bench.
Interesting.
You probably don't need to move Benrahma out then, mate.
Benrahma's first sub, actually. I think West Ham will score a couple of passports. So Livramento second.
Antonio love scoring against us.
I've taken
that pain.
And Spurs, I noticed the Spurs are conceding lots of chances down the middle as well. So that bodes really well for Antonio this week.
Shall we segue on to Spurs then for the next section?
Sure. Baker, the floor is all yours.
Yep.
Yep.
Look, Newcastle are not a very good team. I probably should start with that one. And we still tried to find a way to make it difficult, you know, giving away a late goal. But there's definitely a change in how we're playing. So when we played Arsenal, we played it. And before that, it was a bit of a 4-3-3. We've moved off of the system where Dele Alli plays. He's the main one that's come out. Albeit Dele Alli did play in the Conference League in the number 10 role, the role that we saw Ndombele play in. So if he is, doesn't mean I don't think that Alli will not play, but he's not playing as like one of a midfield three or out wide. If you look at the way they played against Arsenal, that's like a kids formation, you know, is to stick a couple of defenders and the rest of them just run forward and try and see what can happen. You know, it just doesn't work. But if you take it forward and look at the Villa one, it suddenly looked like a bit more shape. There was a Conference game against Farmers, but it was good again. And then the Newcastle one, the shape was so apparent. And Skip is a big reason for it. Romero is much better leader than, say, Sanchez. And we need that in terms of a really top-class centre-back. Him and Dyer look like they formed, you know, a partnership. Skip and Højbjerg then sit in front of it. Fullbacks do their fullback job. And then Tanguy has that free role in the number 10. It makes a much bigger difference. Lucas does all the work. And what this all means is you basically go back to last season where you have 9 players playing a game and then 2 players who'll get FPL points. And that's good because you know who to pick, you know, and it's Son and Kane. You know, it's look, none of us, or we had to do what we had to do around wild cards in terms of not putting Son in, but we're looking at them now and trying to work the money, you know, to work how we do it. This is, you know, Baker stats rather than Backard stats is my favorite metric is thumbs up in a game. And I happen to notice that Kane gave the thumbs up directly to Nuno. And I tried to see if you could get some video of this, but actually they cut off it because they obviously don't think it's as important as I do. But at the time, the way the look that he gave Nuno for that goal and then also for the next one, like, I do wonder how much Kane had an influence in this change of shape and how much he appreciates the way that it's working for them. And I guarantee that him and Son appreciate it. And you can almost see it. They're like, we're the best two players, so can you just do the system that we like? Yeah, please. And could you do the one that's quite good at creating in the middle? Just put him there. And so Lo Celso or Tanguy play that bit behind. And can you just get then 6 defenders behind that? Yeah, fine. And that's how it looks like it works now, you know. And you're like, okay, they're on the radar because it doesn't actually matter if Spurs are a bang average team. They were a really bad team under Mourinho last season and they both got over 200 points. And you look at it again this season, you're like, I can rely on them. And what you do get with Son and what you do get with Kane is you get both threats. You know, you saw it with Kane there is you look at Ronaldo and you look at Lukaku, you're not getting assists. You're not getting that ball that he puts across on a plate for Heung-min Son. Therefore, got more ways to score. You know, that's why Kane's such a good captain option as a striker, whereas I'm not so sure about the rest, which is probably where we're going next.
Yeah, this brings me to the question. Do you think the double up is worth it from game week 12 onwards, or would you just go with Son because he's easier to accommodate and fit into the squad?
The problem is, like,
sell Lukaku,
you're asking a Spurs fan, do I want 2 Tottenham players? Like, of course I do. It's exactly what I want. I want to be able to say, yeah, that's the best thing to do. Like, but I can also tell you that when I do it and spend a quarter of my funds on those players and then Tottenham turn out a terrible performance, that... I mean, there's no coincidence.
Double whammy.
It's no coincidence Tottenham are bad and I'm in the top 10K. There's no... I do think to myself, oh, they come back, good fixtures.
I think you can move on from Lukaku at that point because I think that's right after his Burnley fixture. They have Leicester, United, Watford, West Ham,
yep,
Chelsea, and then Spurs have Leeds, Burnley, Brentford, Norwich.
Yeah, but Zoff, from game week 13 onwards, United's fixtures are pretty good as well. Game week 13 or 14, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, but I'm not really keen on going on United.
Would,
I think
obviously United at this point in time, at this point in time, it's very hard to advocate getting Ronaldo, at that point in time. But you never know. I mean, this could be a very valid question, you know, whether to jump straight to Ronaldo or whether to go via the Kane route.
Absolutely. And not form dependent.
I personally prefer Kane, actually. I'm leaning with you guys on this one. I think that with those fixtures, I think he's easily captainable in two of those, home to Leeds and then home to Norwich. I fancy Spurs in those two in particular. And Spurs have a habit of beating these easy teams quite comfortably as well. So Kane and Son in particular do well in terms of these fixtures. Right. So off, we've lost you again.
Again?
I think we have.
My God. Cool. It's good. So what I'm going to do
is... Backer and Baker show.
This is actually the Backer and Baker show. Zoff is in and out.
Yep, the B&B. Cool. So what I'm going to do is...
He's back again.
Arsenal Palace, do you guys want to cover much? Nothing much to talk about. Should we just skip to the captaincy?
I think we should skip to the captaincy.
Yep. We've been building up to it so much. Let's just quickly, before we get into discussion, some quick stats. Now, this is over the last four game weeks in terms of XG non-penalty. Liverpool are on top, 9.21. Chelsea are 6.11. In terms of shots inside the box, Chelsea 37, Liverpool 43, similar. But in terms of big chances, Liverpool 22, Chelsea 42. Not too great. In terms of open play goal conceded, now the last four, Norwich have been pretty decent. They've conceded fewer open play shots than Arsenal, the same number as Brentford. Now, this is my favorite thing to see. Away. Look at in terms of XG conceded non-penalty. The last four game weeks, Manchester United 19th. So who has a better fixture this week?
Just to put it into context, it's off.
It's not the same making the joke without I miss Pranil so much.
the last four fixtures for context, Norwich, they've been easy. Watford, I know. Burnley, Everton and Brighton. So I think that skews the stats quite a bit. And when you look at the numbers over the season, Norwich are far worse than United. United are actually mid-table for XG conceded and Norwich are 19th, conceding almost like three big chances per game. For me, I'm very, very set on captaining Lukaku. I just think it's a plum fixture. I can't see Chelsea not winning comfortably. These are exactly the kind of fixtures Lukaku likes to flat track bully his way to goals. And so I think he's going to do well. Even when I look at the odds, Lukaku 64% to score. Salah is 42%. So
42?
I just think I'd go. Sorry?
He's just 42? Even 42%. Penalties? Wow, that's underpriced, I think.
Yeah. Lukaku 64%. I just think that I'd go with Lukaku, and you know another small point to make is the home and away argument as well, that Liverpool are playing away and Chelsea are playing at home. So 55.7% of the goals at home have been scored by the home team this season, while 44% have been scored away. So just the extra chance of a haul when your captain is playing at home.
Martin, where do you stand on this?
Thing is, I guess is one of the things is that you hear a lot at the moment is around like Salah would be a differential captain and Lukaku's the overwhelming captain. And we go back, say, 2 weeks ago, I think all of us expected this was like a 200% captain. You know, this was the reason we were all getting him in. But he's not as owned as I thought he was. That was a real surprise for me when the game sort of refreshed is like, 60% of the top 10K have got Lukaku. He's trending downwards in terms of transfers for this week. And you're like, 100%. 99.8% of the top 10K have got Salah. So 40% of them are definitely captaining Salah. So you're looking at 140% captain there minimum. And that's if everyone who's got Lukaku captains him. Just... You know, I think you look at Salah's stats probably before I look at Lukaku's stats. That's in my initial thing, because I'm like, he's the one that's going to hurt me. Yeah. And then I think to myself, is how comfortable am I captain Salah? Well, I'm really comfortable captain him in the way he is. I think of this world of we play fantasy football, and you think of these fantasy sort of scenarios, as Backers talks about. That's the way we're moving as a podcast. And, you know, that way of we set up as in defensive way, and you feel like, well, what happens if they score early? There comes a time when the boos come, and it's such a big game for United. It is the biggest game. They set up defensively and they concede early. People leave. Like that. So the home advantage for United goes if that's an early goal. You know, it could play out. It could go the other way. They could rouse, you know, and United could do it. Whereas I think the other, if you look at the fixture and say, do I see Norwich scoring or beating Chelsea? No, I do not see that. I only see one way that result goes. So you are taking, you know, a gamble, I think, a little bit more on Salah. But, you know, I look at what sort of stacks up for it and I think to myself, well, get no assists from Lukaku, getting nothing there. It's just simply goals and it's how many goals. I worry about that substitution last week. I look at it and I think to myself, that was a worry. And then you see the comments today about tiredness and you think, wow, imagine if they are 3-0 up and he hasn't scored because there's plenty of others that can score. I look at things like Salah's creativity and think, well, actually, he can get assists. He gets more points for a goal. He gets a clean sheet point. And then I think, well, he probably won't get that clean sheet because they'll both score, probably. And then I started looking at some things like, well, when both teams score, how does Salah do? And you go, well, they played two big games. They played Chelsea. He got top bonus. Played City. He got top bonus. And then I look at Chelsea and think, well, they'll get a clean sheet. And so far this season, when Chelsea kept a clean sheet, defenders have taken 23 of the bonus. Midfielders 2, strikers 6. Lukaku, obviously. But they dominate. Chelsea defenders dominate the bonus. You saw that performance from Saar on the weekend. Like, Lukaku's got to score 2 to be getting in the bonus if it's a clean sheet. Because Chilwell scores, an Aspi scores, someone scores, Chalobah scored. You know, somebody's going to score. And then if Werner's playing as well and he scores, then it's, I see a lot of things going wrong. Whereas I see Salah is the best player in the league. He's played every single minute, 90 minutes, every single game. There won't be Klopp saying, oh, he's tired. He won't play Man United. He will play all 90 minutes, no matter what that score is.
Zoff, don't you think Lukaku might get rested tomorrow? I think Tuchel's comments are sort of preparing the Chelsea fans for benching tomorrow rather than on the weekend.
So I think Tuchel's comments, I think you have to take them with a pinch of salt. He was sort of covering up for Lukaku. The questions are, why isn't Lukaku scoring goals? He's not going to serve my strikers shit. He can't score goals. He's going to try to cover up his deficiencies, make excuses for him almost, right? That's what he's doing. So don't read anything into his comments about him saying Lukaku needs rest. If Lukaku was scoring goals right now, he'd be saying, oh, he doesn't need a rest. The more he plays, the better he gets. And he never explicitly said he's going to bench him. He said, I don't know if he needs minutes or I don't know if he needs rest. So I think he's just kind of papering over the cracks, sort of not putting pressure on Lukaku. So I think Lukaku needs to play. He needs to score goals because he's still, apart from that start at Arsenal, those couple of goals against Villa, you haven't seen him sort of, you know, gel with the team, move with the team. So I think he needs more minutes on the pitch. So I don't think in terms of rest tomorrow, especially because the easiest thing would be to start against Malmo, score a couple of goals, score 2-3 goals, can get taken off around 60. And a similar scenario against Norwich. That would probably be the ideal scenario.
What if Havertz starts tomorrow night and gets a hat-trick in Europe like it did last season? It was Carabao, wasn't it?
It was the Carabao Cup. I remember that he got the hat-trick there. So, but then I think you'd probably see Havertz alongside Lukaku against Norwich, because I think that might be a better setup, because Timo's against these teams that leave a little bit of space to run, right? Norwich are not going to be leaving any space. And this is what I wanted to talk about the home away stuff now. Before talking into numbers, how do we think these matches are going to play out? In terms of Chelsea-Norwich, I see Norwich parking 11 men behind the ball and just happy to leave with a 1-0 or a 2-0. They're not going to leave any spaces behind to counter-attack. And the thing is, with three centre-backs, it's all the attention is sort of going to be on Lukaku, maybe a little bit. I expect the support cast to get involved, the wing backs to do well, and Lukaku possibly to nick a goal. But I totally understand what you're talking about in terms of the game state in United-Liverpool. The pressure is on Solskjaer. We don't know what's going to happen in the Champions League, but let's assume he gets a bad result there as well. And then Liverpool score the first goal at Old Trafford. It's going to be a cauldron. The whole thing is just going to turn on its head, and the players' heads would be down. And he can't set up as negatively. There's a lot of talk that he did well in the big games last year, but that was without a crowd. He can't set up in that negative a way with in front of a packed Old Trafford, right?
He can't. How would you, as a Chelsea fan, how would you feel if you got a penalty at 0-0 with Tim Krul?
I would feel actually more, I don't know, I still don't know who would take it. I still think Lukaku would take it over Jorginho.
Yeah.
And if Lukaku, Lukaku took it, I would be a bit more confident just because of the thing, silly thing that Jorginho does with the step. I feel Krul was going to be wise to that, but I have no worries about. I think we will win, but I don't think Chelsea. And this is another point that Tuchel made right now. He said it's more important for him to be difficult to beat than to score 3-4 goals. This is not something else he said today. So he'll take a 1-0 or a 2-0, but Liverpool are going to keep going. This is the fixture for him. And right now, you see Salah is performing at a stage now where he knows he's up there in the discussion with being the best players in the world. This is the first time, I think, in his career, you could say he's actually at the level where he can be considered, yep, like, you know, best in the world. And this right now, this game is the biggest stage for any Liverpool fan, any Manchester United fan. Any game doesn't get bigger than this fixture. For Liverpool fans, at Old Trafford is still the ultimate game you want to win in the calendar.
So who are you on at the minute?
I'm on Salah.
Oh, that's a surprise. I didn't expect you to be on Salah.
Because I don't think we'd score too many past Norwich. Maybe we'll get the one goal, two goal, and then Lukaku gets taken off around the 70th minute. But I think United could get put to the sword here.
Fair enough. I mean, Liverpool's attacking numbers you've just mentioned are brilliant. So I can see why you've gone
Varane,
there.
Varane is a massive loss.
I do think it's a close choice. It's definitely not obvious, but I think there's a case for both. But I usually like going with the fixtures. So for me, I'd probably go with Lukaku.
That's the case.
I just think there's a higher ceiling.
Is it the easiest fixture now, today, the present day? Let's ignore that it's Manchester United. Just look at the way they've been playing the last few games. And I understand what you're saying. I'm just trying to say, look beyond the numbers over here. In terms of the scenario, the kind of pressure that is on Solskjaer when United are at the bottom low, Liverpool at the height. It just seems like the opportunity for me.
But one thing I've come to see with Solskjaer is that when the pressure hits the roof, that's when actually United sort of perform, and he inevitably ends up saving his job. We've been here before where we just think this is the weekend where he's going to get sacked, and we're sat here after a year and turns out he's still in the job. So this is something I've noticed, you know. This is exactly when he sort of turns up, and I won't be surprised if United got something of a result in this game, or put in a respectable performance at least. It won't surprise me, honestly, which is why I'm just a bit wary of going with Salah.
Yeah, it makes sense because Chelsea could also look at this opportunity to get more goals. I don't think he'll change formation for this one, but he'll definitely put out a more attacking lineup in terms of your Mounts, your Havertz, your Jorginhos. It's not going to be as negative as we've seen in previous games. So you could be right as well. There's no like clear decision either way.
Yeah, I personally see Chelsea scoring at least 3, which is why the decision is clear. I am not paying too much attention to, you know, Norwich's recent resurgence or something of the sort. I just think Chelsea will have most of their creative players back and they should do well.
That's fair. Where are you leading, Martin?
Salah. Not it for me. I want to take the punt, you know, on it. I do think if you ask me to predict the results now, 3-0 Chelsea, 3-1 maybe Liverpool, is kind of how I see them playing out. I don't see Liverpool scoring less than 2 goals in any game, you know, at the moment. But I just want the player that I'm enjoying watching a lot. I'm not really enjoying watching Lukaku play at the moment. And I'm hoping, you know, I want to be one of those smug people all weekend because it's the early game on Saturday. And imagine if he blanks, how enjoyable your weekend's going to be. That's going to come into people's decisions. As they, people don't work it out now, but they'll work it out in a couple of days. They'll be like, oh, it's the last game. Oh, I've got this. And because then you can just say, oh, I'm doing really badly, big red arrow on Saturday, like get all the sympathy votes. And then Sunday you get to gloat. It's great. You know, they're both great. That's the thing. They're both going to be great. I'm trying to sort of start the Salah movement because I'm like, this is my way of keeping the Lukaku under 100% owns, you know, just try and propaganda it out, come see you guys, get bigger stage and get that movement going. If we all do it and we all captain Salah, we all win, you know, that's
some threads.
Last point on the effective ownership that you mentioned. I noticed that Ronaldo was around 46-47% on the top 10K, and I assume that, you know, at least half of them, if not like 30-35% of them, will be jumping ship to Lukaku this week. So I do think Lukaku's effective ownership will be very high this week. Definitely more than 140, I would have thought.
There's a good Twitter account, FPL Analytics. So every hour they just tweet, these are the most transfers out, these are the most transfers in. I keep a real good eye on that because it kind of almost tells you those trends. They're going to Vardy. They're all going to Vardy. I'm a little worried at how many are going to Vardy, you know, is if you look at it, Ronaldo to Vardy is a big number. And not, Lukaku's not featured. How mad is that? Lukaku is not featured in the top five players in any hour. I mean, I'm not looking at 24 hours a day.
Since the last price change, I'll tell you shortly how many people have brought in Lukaku. It's not much at all.
It's going to Vardy. Like, so it will be, you're right, it won't be 62% of it because if you're in the top 10K...
5,000 people today have brought in Lukaku and 37,000 people have brought in Vardy. So it's seven times the amount.
It's kind of Vardy.
That's absolutely nuts. That's absolutely nuts.
It's so mad. So Brentford have been brilliant. And Leicester go away there. People are going there rather than go.
Yeah, this just sort of reinforces the point that, you know, so many people are buying Vardy. So, I mean, Salah is probably going to be their go-to captain then this week.
It's correct. So the differential captain, in fact, is Lukaku, not Salah.
Hmm.
So I think you have to look at it that way. Is it an opportunity to bet? So that if the default crowd is going for the Liverpool one, do you see Lukaku as enough of a sort to go against Salah? And I think it potentially could.
You know, I was going through quite a few Twitter polls and Lukaku was like 70% captain. So I thought that, you know, that the similar trend would be followed by the top 10K as well.
That's a Twitter bubble.
So many people are buying Vardy there from Ronaldo that sort of gives an indication that Salah's effective ownership is going to be very, very high as well, possibly higher than Lukaku actually.
Yeah, but the Twitter bubble values, I think, fixtures more so than the form.
I've lost you again. I'm back.
Back again.
Oh, you're back.
Brilliant. Getting there, limping over the line. Right. So anything else to add in terms of this debate?
Yep.
Or should we move
now
on?
He's back. Yep.
So, good. All good. Two in Team Salah, one in Team Lukaku.
Yeah, I think I'm going to stay on Salah, but if we look really good against Malmo, I might be tilted tomorrow.
I mean, if you don't, as a Chelsea fan, and you don't go Lukaku at home to Norwich.
I'd rather go Chelsea captains, in fact, right? Because for me, it's a sort of emotional hedging. I mean, I'm going to be happy with Lukaku scores regardless, so I don't mind that. It's easier for me, in fact, I would say, as a Chelsea fan.
Start the movement, guys. You've got bigger accounts than me. Back, all you got to do, tweet out.
Threads,
everyone, go on.
Threads.
Do a thread on it for us. Get the ownership up. Keep Lukaku under 100%. Handshakes all round.
Oh, this is hilarious.
Let's do our teams.
Teams? Yeah, let's go to the teams.
Do a short
Q&A. Who's up first?
I think whose team is this? I have to check. Townsend, it's, and this is you, Baker's. Right, Martin? This is Townsend. Yep.
I wish I hadn't done that punt on Townsend for Bumo. I should have just gone with Bumo. But hey, this was the fixture I got him for. So he's in. You know, what an asset Livramento is, that you just sit there regretting the fact that you've got like a 4.2 million defender on the bench. But yeah, that's where it is. I mean, it looks an easy role for me this week. As you can see, the captaincy is on man in red in the middle. And Armstrong looks an easy bench for me. Livramento, first sub. Looks all good. So, yeah, for audio, Cancelo, Trent, Aspi and Diaz at the back, Ramsdale goal, Townsend, Salah, Foden, Rafinha, and then Lukaku and Antony up front. That's me.
Banking, you're sitting, what, 7K right now overall?
Yeah, about 7.8, something like that.
Whew, that's really good. What's worked for you this season?
I don't know. I've been consistent. So I this was actually my highest week above the safety score. Like I've been within 1 point of the safety score every week. I had a good first week because I had Benrahma and Antonio. So it was like 26K after the first week. And then I've not gone outside of that. It was like 15K, 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 12K, and now 8K. So it's been really solid. I've played 4-4-2 actually almost every week, or at least four defenders in every week this season. That definitely has made it. You know, I was hoping to go to three across the top, but it's not got there. So my Twitter handle of 3-4-3 at the end was because that is my favorite formation, and it may have to just disappear because it doesn't look like it's happening anytime soon. There's just so many good defensive options. Yeah. But yeah, it's been good. Can't complain.
I think you're well placed to save a transfer here also, Raj. Like you said, you can leave Armstrong here, see how the situation develops.
Just to ask though, what would you do? I reckon about Friday time, Armstrong's going to get a decrease. He's like...
That's interesting.
And bearing in mind Foden and Cancelo have played tonight, I can see me using that bench.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah, Foden, Cancelo, you never know what happens with the other guys as well. So,
I don't think we can be sure.
It's pretty
safe.
I don't think you can be sure, though.
You
can't be absolutely sure. You cannot be sure because I don't think he's going to play on the right wing back. He's not going to play wing back. It seems very unlikely. It's a perfect game to play James. At right center back, you could be playing your Christensen's, et cetera, et cetera. So, it's possible.
So I am tempted to go Armstrong to Brozier and get £1 million in the bank because I feel like what I've tried to look at is we're game week 9 now. I'm probably going to want to remove Townsend. I'm probably going to want Tony. I'm probably going to want Son in the next few weeks. So I've got to try and start planning the way to that. And it's either hold and then you're maybe looking at the three forwards again and move that, or I can see myself more moving Antonio down to Tony and taking some more money out and moving that to the midfield. So I might start that process now and just go Armstrong to Brozier. I can't see any reason why he doesn't keep his place. But it was really impressive.
Yeah, just have to monitor injury news because I think he limped off.
I've lost his off again. Thank you.
I can hear him.
It's cool. I was just saying that maybe you can catch it up later on the chat that just watch out for Broja's injury news because he limped off in that game. We'll move on to the next one. Is this your team, Bakar, or is this mine? It's cool. You guys will get me back. I'll just walk through my team till then. It's Ramsdale, Cancelo, Diaz, Trent, James in defense. In midfield is Bumo, Foden, Salah Cap, Rafinha, up top, Lukaku.
Can't hear you.
Oh, I've got you back.
It'll pop back in a second. It's been a nightmare today.
You can hear us all? Okay, I can hear him as well now.
What a nightmare today. Less said the better. Let's just get this done with. Lukaku, Antonio, Foster, Livramento, Adam Armstrong, Brownhill. And I've got 0.4 in the bank. So I'm probably going to roll the transfer. But like you said, if I see Armstrong possibly falling in value, I have the money in the bank to go direct to Tony.
Oh, I just do it.
Probably, right? Makes sense just to do it just in case you need the sub and move Tony ahead of Livramento on the sub order. Because that's an exit route. I wasn't very comfortable getting Armstrong, so I was very happy to have that exact money for that exit route.
You play him over Bumo, Zoff?
No, I'd play Boomer.
Boomer over him.
I'd play Boomer because it's a tougher fixture. If it was an easier fixture, if they were playing somebody like a Norwich, then I would like to play Tony over Boomer. But what I've noticed against the tougher teams, Boomer gets his space.
Set plays. So like Tony at the moment, the most dangerous he looks at is set plays, and Boomer's taking them. Yeah. So you've just got, I just feel like you've got more avenues to points again with Boomer than Tony at the moment.
Yeah, he likes hitting wood more than Bucker. Speaking of which, Bucker's team.
Good one. I have Ramsdale in goal, Cancelo, Azpilicueta, Rudy, Trent, Boomer, Rafinha, Salah, Jimenez, Lukaku, captain, Antonio. On my bench, I have Foster, Benrahma first sub, Livermento second sub, and Brownhill third sub. I have two free transfers and 0.2 million in the bank. Now, I don't really see an obvious move to make with my team, and I'm actually sort of scared that I might mess this team up because it looks good on paper, and whatever isn't broken should not be fixed, right? So I'm considering what I can do here. I have a few options in mind. Zoff suggested Rudy to Chilwell, right? That was the move you suggested, Zoff.
Especially so I have three if, or four like options you see in mind. Chilwell benched tomorrow, right?
Then yes, I think exactly.
It's a good move, especially then.
Yep. Would you sell Rudy or would you sell Aspi? Because I was I'm tempted to move money out of Aspi as well because I think he might miss a few games now. And yeah, I'm actually tempted to sell Aspi because I think Rudy's going to play now. And I'm not sure whether Aspi justifies the premium, like the 0.4 million premium. Do you think he justifies it? I think I can just take the points and run.
I think you make a good point there because with James back now, Aspi's time at right wing back now is surely a little bit more limited.
Yes, and you know, I think he's as good of a starter as Rudy is. So I mean, and then the other option I'm thinking of, I thought of selling Benrahma, but I really don't see an option that price range. So I guess I'll keep him. My plan is to turn Benrahma to Son in a few weeks' time anyway. So I guess I'll just let that be. The other option I'm considering is to sell Jimenez for Tony.
No, don't do that now, this week, definitely, with Leeds. No.
Now, that is something I will be doing eventually in 3 weeks' time anyways. Yeah,
But don't do it this week. You have two free transfers, sorry. So, yeah, no, ruling is not a consideration here. I think the Chelsea defender move makes sense. Even if, I think you can, if you see Chile start, you can even go James. I think you can go for the upside Chelsea defender for the next 3 weeks.
You know, now a couple of points I'd like to make here is that I looked at, you know, Leeds' numbers and they've conceded like by far the most number of chances down the middle, which is great for Jimenez. Good one, Zoff. Good one. There's that and the fact that I'm not sure about game week 12 because I was looking at Mexico's fixture. Mexico are now playing on Wednesday and Wolves have a fixture on Saturday. So there's an extra day of rest. So he might even play after the international next time. I'm not sure. So I can easily sell Antonio to Tony later on and just keep him in as. That's another consideration. I mean, those are the moves I'm thinking of because honestly, other than that, Ramsdale, I still think it makes sense to keep. I mean, Sanchez is the only other keeper I'm tempted by and the next two are horrendous. So unless there's no injury, I think I'd probably move from Aspi to Chilwell. That's what I'm thinking.
Yep. I'd get the upside.
The thing about Aspi, though, is that although he might not play right wing back, right wing back is bonus disappears unless he gets a bit of attacking return because he doesn't make any clearances, doesn't do any of those type of things. And he doesn't really create a lot of chances. He occupies good spaces, but doesn't actually cross a lot. If he does go back to right centre-back, he's good on the bonus again. So yes, he might not get the attacking return, but I just feel like his bonus potential is a bit more again. So he is just the most sort of balanced bit, isn't he, of someone that's quite attacking and quite
it's
nailed.
Tricky. This is exactly what I'm trying to say. You know, it's a luxury transfer. I'm very skeptical that I might end up wrecking my team just for the sake of making a transfer.
I would keep them both.
What would you do here?
What would you do?
Keep them both.
No, as a transfer, you just burn the transfer.
You got two.
Yep.
Yes.
Benrahma.
Four. Yeah, exactly. Oh. 0.2 in the bank.
6.5 wow. budget, right?
Yeah, 6.5.
You already got
Rafinha. That's the tricky bit race. About Jimenez and Antonio, exactly. isn't it? I see it now. You say it. Now I'm
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Oh,
this is what I'm going on about. It.
If you
this
get
is
the Jimenez down to Tony, then you can go, then I can do a bit more fun in Benrahma.
See, my plan is to turn Benrahma to Son in 12. So for that, eventually I'll have to free up funds. You know, from maybe Antonio to Tony or something along those lines.
Yeah.
This is very tricky.
I still think the Chelsea defender is the play. Get an attacking Chelsea defender.
Would you be tempted by any chances to swap Cancelo to Diaz?
No. Cancelo's a better one, I think.
I think I would go really good at Chilwell looking at it again because I feel like... But I would move Livramento first on that bench.
Yeah.
And because I feel like actually is Livramento or Rudiger. Livramento could easily outscore Rudiger this weekend. Is you're likely to get a six at best Rudiger. Livramento could outscore that. And there's not a lot of huge downside on it, but Chilwell is likely if he plays to massively outscore Livramento.
You'd sell Rudiger over Aspi?
Oh yeah. Because of Livra, because Livramento is such a good asset, you know, you're just not unhappy to have him come in any time. Give it the chance. Therefore...
A good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been sweating over this. I mean, I'm sort of half hoping for, you know... It's yeah, tough, I'm sort of half hoping for some option or some obvious transfer to open up, which hasn't been the case. So
it might.
Let's see. I mean,
Let's see what happens over the next two rounds of matches in the UCL.
Yep, let's see. All right, thanks, guys.
Q&A? Let's just do a short Q&A. We have around 7-8 minutes before the City game starts. Right. Thanks for everyone for sticking with us in the chat through all the tech errors today. We appreciate it. Do drop us a like and send in your questions, please. Is the City game today away or is it at home?
It's away.
Awesome. Makes more sense, I guess, that he's gone full strength. So who do you think is playing up top here? Foden?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that makes sense to me, yeah. Must be. Because Grealish shouldn't really work in that role.
Which might suggest, you know, bear in mind that Sterling and Foden shared it on the weekend, that Foden's got it.
Right.
That's what we're going to say because we own him. So.
All right, lads. First question is here. Zoff, are you going to read out the question?
I'll read it. I have the chat open now. Sure. This is a super chat from Gaurav. Thank you, Gaurav. Two free transfers, Ronaldo and Benrahma to KDB and Jimenez. Vardy or one of the City mids. Kane or 7.5 mid, not mount. He already owns Lukaku and he's got wildcard penciled in for game week 12. Ronaldo and Benrahma to KDB Jimenez looks really good to me. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think that's a better option than Vardy, Foden or Vardy Grealish.
Correct. Martin?
I quite like the Vardy and Foden.
You do, but it's KDB.
I like it.
You're not a KDB fanboy?
I just think... Yeah, I think the thing with KDB is I end up just getting suckered into captaining him. I feel like I've just got those scars from like game week 3 and 4 last season when all my Spurs mates were captaining Kane and I was like, yeah, KDB, and it didn't work out. So
I just like the two Dale players. You have KDB and Jimenez, you're getting two solid options there. And Vardy
and
Foden
very good on bonus as well. Zoff, very good on bonus. Yeah,
both of them. Bonus monsters.
Best player on each team. So yeah. Okay. On me over.
I think option A. We have another super chat from Albas89. Would you roll the free transfer and keep Mahrez against Brighton? Play him or, and he's asking whether we should play him or bench him to avoid a cameo. And who would you downgrade him to if you want to sell him?
Rafinha or Mbumo, I think.
But I guess he's starting today. So what do you think? Is he going to start against Brighton?
I lost you. So I'm not there, but.
Yeah, I think Jesus is going to start the next game.
Right. So I'd say get rid of Mahrez. Probably for Foden or Bumo if you don't have them, Albas.
Zoff, we've lost you.
Yeah.
That's fine. We'll come back.
I think if I had Mahrez, I think I would keep him just on the risk. You knew what you're getting into, unless you had a real easy exit plan. Probably depends on the state of the bench as well.
Depends on the state of the bench. And I think the cameo is high chance, but I don't think he's going to play with Grealish back. Next question is from Nihil. If on wildcard, will he go Sun or Wadi? They're asking when the next IB is. I think the next IB is after what, game week 9, 10, 10? Around game week 11 or game week 12, right?
That's right. I'd go Sun. With Sun over Wadi personally.
Same. Do I need to ask you, Martin? Yeah, I guess this one.
It's just the structure thing as well, isn't it? That it's easy to stay in that structure, but if you go Vardy, you can't go Vardy to Sun very easily.
I agree. I just like the midfield heavy hitter, right? Seems like more avenues for points. Like Sun gets one goal, straight 9-10 points. Harendra Kapoor advising you to get Rhea Bakker for Ramsdale.
I looked at Brentford's fixtures next to one. I think they're going to concede this week against Leicester personally. And even in the next fixture against Burnley, where I'm not too confident. I just don't want to make that transfer for the sake of making a transfer, honestly. I think I'll give Ramsdale the next three because those are essentially the fixtures that I bought him for. Watford in 12, Watford in 11. Then this week, even like Villa is a decent fixture. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, maybe around 14, 15, you can look at it, a bit more data as well, right?
Exactly.
Well, I'm still ready to see how Brentford will set up against teams in and around them. I think they'll set up very differently against Norwich than they did against Chelsea.
I'm finding it very hard to read their numbers, actually. You know, their numbers this week were exceptional. They just limited Chelsea to one shot inside the box. But then there are some games where they've been very, very expansive. So I want to wait a few more weeks before I can sort of pass the accurate assessment of how they're looking like.
I also think that some of the defenders have got more upside, you know, and then, you know, like Pinnock, and I can see myself just going there rather than Raya or something like that. Mm.
Do you think Foden and Cancelo will start this weekend after playing today? I think we discussed this already, right?
Yep.
Tuesday, Saturday.
I think it's a good sign. I would say this is the team he wanted to put out tonight. So
I think very much a first choice team, I think, across the entire 11 today.
I think we've been told off for not talking about Arsenal. Can you blame me? Because you got a Spurs fan.
I mean, the less said about them, the better.
Oh, I honestly can't comment because I haven't even had a chance to watch yesterday's highlights and I watched nothing of the game. So
And it was horrible, honestly. Palace were all over them.
Vieira is doing a good job there.
Definitely, he's doing a very good job. Their fixtures have been tough, but the performances have been decent. More than decent, actually.
A bit worrying. Then.
Marked improvement from last season.
Are you worried a little bit as a Ramsdale or no, Bakker? I've only been here 1 week, so I don't know yet.
Slightly. But then again, I mean, for keepers, I'd like to give him the next three games. I mean, the only realistic alternative I have in mind at this point in time is Sanchez, and his next two fixtures are very tough. So I'm comfortable giving him the next two or three, at least.
Fair enough.
Half-time, anyone who owned Ramsdale and anyone who didn't own Ramsdale thought they were in for the 10-pointer was coming. Mm-hmm. He was excellent. He got three saves in the bank. He was positionally good, you know. And then I missed the start of the second half, and by the time I checked it, they'd already conceded, and that was rubbish.
That was history.
Yeah, for a half, he was very, very good and looked the keeper to have. And I just feel like that's the main thing on keepers at the moment is we normally know by now who the keeper's going to be, and I don't think we do. So I think you just got to stick who you got until someone really does put their hand up.
Right. So I think we have a couple more super chats from when we were streaming earlier, and this is the same question that posed to you. But I need to move from Benrahma, but not sure who to bring in. I already have Bumo and Rafinha, so I don't really know the answer to this question.
Exactly. Just leave it as it is.
Maybe Gallagher. I mean, if you really have to bring in someone,
I'm not sure.
I don't want to say bench him. Seems like a cop out to say bench him.
No, I mean, I'd play him. Honestly, Gallagher's lost set pieces, which is sort of, that's why
just keep
some
him,
of the
right?
numbers have gone down.
The answer would just
what
be
I'm
play.
Saying, keep him.
Play Benrahma.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Fair enough. Totally agree there. Right. One last question on a wild card, James and Chilwell or James and Mendy? I think Mendy as a premium keeper.
Yeah, I'd go with Chilwell, obviously.
Upside. I'd go with Chilwell. I'd go Chilwell Mendy. He's not mentioned that combination. That sort of that agreed. Looks nice to me.
Yeah, agreed. Chilwell Mendy.
Cool. Let's wrap up, guys. I think we finished up at the game. The City games
one
also started.
Lost off again.
Yep. I think he was just wrapping up.
I'm sure. Thanks for joining us again, Martin. It's been a pleasure. We'll have you again, hopefully soon on some day where we have the tech gods are kinder to us. I don't think he heard that as well. So, Bakar, could you hear me?
Right. No.
Makes sense. After all the
tech issues. I thought you just finished.
I think after all the tech issues we had, it's only fitting we ended on that note. Thanks for joining us, guys. Things will be better next time.
Good luck for the game week.
Pleasure, guys. Sports Social Podcast
Network. It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.